Time to talk a little bit of footy, get our teeth stuck into it. Now, you threw a few interesting names up there just before 7 o'clock.
I did, and I didn't throw this one out there too, but just this is just a point about the rebuild. And we had Jeff Kennett on our program a couple of days ago. He said it's a two-year rebuild.
We'll bring that up with Jordan Lewis when he joins us.
Okay, the team before Hawthorn that won three flags in a row, who was that?
Geelong?
No, three flags in a row.
Oh, sorry, in a row, Brisbane?
Yes, okay. Back in 2003, okay, so after their third flag win in 2003, in 2004 they went second, and then it's 18 years since they won their last flag now, okay? So Hawthorn, after their last flag in 2015, they went fifth in 2016, okay, and then they're sort of fallen off.
So into the sixth year without
silverware. That's right.
Silverware. So you're suggesting it might be a little bit longer?
I'm suggesting if you don't get it right and you don't make the decisions early enough and you don't have stability and all the things that are required to have the chance of being successful, then it can take an awfully long time to get back up there again.
So where did Geelong fit in this? They, 7 and 9 and 11, was it?
Yeah, they've managed it a lot better. Like, they actually...
They missed the finals once under Chris Scott.
That's right. It's been a while since they won a flag, but in terms of staying around the mark... Now, you could throw out the question, okay, what's better, to stay around the mark or to take your medicine, go back and actually build for a flag? But, they've come close to challenging for a flag again during that period of time. So they've managed it incredibly well. But, I mean, when you look at that, you think, that's incredible, isn't it? It's 18 years ago. Mm. 18 years since the Brisbane Lions won their last flag. And at that time, they were untouchable. They were unstoppable, just like Hawthorn.
Yeah, so I think they made some... Yeah, decisions now that you look back on and go, I think that's what Jordan got. He's got to get at, and he'll speak to us out of 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
Is that you make a decision when you get to the fork, and you can go one way or the other, and then the recruiting decisions, and that's why we always talk about recruiting and how critically important it is. And Stephen Wells has done a fantastic job at Geelong by finding all Australians from local footy clubs. I mean, the Tom Stewart one is. It's just still – so when you talk about how do you stay in the – be without the draft picks and, Hawthorn haven't had draft – been the draft – well, you can pull gems from nowhere.
Yeah.
If you – it's not luck because Stephen Wells has done it so consistently.
If you were Melbourne and you had Cozzie Pickett, what would you be doing right now in terms of his contract? Would you be trying to renegotiate his contract now?
Oh, you'd be doing what Matt Rowell – the Western – Gold Coast Suns did with Matt Rowell. You'd sit him down with Noah Anderson. You go, well, these blokes have got stars written all over them. Let's try and extend them out.
Yeah.
Because we've got them for two years once they've been drafted. That's the minimum. But we want to try and lock them away for more.
Yeah, you want to lock him away for another 3 years. So you'd be going to him, would you not, and saying, okay, well, look, let's just put a cross through that contract. We're not paying you enough right now. What we need to do is we need to renegotiate your contract now.
Yep.
But in good faith also, what we would like to do is we'd like to extend that out for another 3 years and lock you away for, say, 4 years.
Mm.
You'd have that conversation with him now?
I would imagine it's going on right now.
You won't want him coming out of contract because how exciting he is and what a hot property he would become.
Correct.
And that's no suggestion that he would even leave, but what it does, it just creates that whole conversation around him as a player, but also the fact that it allows everybody else to have a crack at him in terms of what they're prepared to offer.
Mm.
And then even when you keep him, if you manage to keep him, then you're going to be paying a lot more than what you probably would be today.
Correct. That's just life.
It is.
That's why these sides at Robo. So you could track Cozzie with Cyril, really, couldn't you? And Cyril could have. How many times could Cyril have left for more money?
Oh, a lot. Many times.
Yeah,
many times. Now, Lockie Hunter, are you – this is – Lockie Hunter, we know that he played, I think, almost a half of the game last weekend with a broken hand. He's had surgery this week. Would they legitimately be thinking about playing him this weekend against Port Adelaide?
So the story in the press is, he may get up and he may be able to carry the broken hand in through this game against Port Adelaide, which shapes as it's a magnificent prospect, this game, Port Adelaide and the Western Bulldogs. It really is. But you wouldn't – given the depth that the Dogs have got, you wouldn't in round nine be playing – I don't know. Well, maybe you would. But why would you play a bloke with a broken hand?
Why? Exactly. Why do you need to play anybody at this time of the season with an injury like that. He can't have recovered fully and properly.
Because there's value also in having a week off. Even, just if you've got no injury, if you're in a position to be able to give someone a week off during this long, arduous season, then you'd grab it. Now, the reality is most clubs won't be because they're going to have to try and keep pushing for wins. But if you're in a situation where you can, you would. Now, the Bulldogs aren't there. No one's there because we're only 8 rounds into a season. But in the back half, that may present itself. But if it's right now, it's the broken hand, then it's the broken hand, isn't it?
Yeah. This may just be a paper story or may just be a media story, though. Like, the Bulldogs may not be intending to play him at all. The other player that they're having a little bit of trouble with at the moment is Tim English. He's had a headache now for 2 weeks. So he's no certainty, even though that he's served that time, he's no certainty to come back and play this weekend either.
What did Tommy Brown, I didn't catch the 7 News yesterday, he said there was more detail surrounding the Channel 7, the Richmond situation. So what is the more detail?
Well, we've got the grab here, haven't we? Have we got the grab here to play?
Sorry, let's have a listen.
Eyewitnesses claim that Rioli and Bolton remained outside the club yo-yo for up to 30 minutes after they were evicted. They've told 7 News that Rioli argued at length with a security guard and Bolton tried to re-enter the club on multiple occasions. Now, the AFL Integrity Department is concerned, I'm told, about the length of time between the fight and when league officials were first told about the incident. They're a bit sceptical on the facts, in particular Richmond's version of events, I'm told. Witnesses have told 7 News the fight between both players and the man inside was particularly aggressive after they took offence at the man's highly inappropriate gesture towards Rioli's girlfriend.
Okay, so that's Tom's report last night on Channel 7, right? Which, if the AFL Integrity Department are now investigating this, and what Tom is saying is true, and there are more circumstances surrounding this, does that then potentially mean that the AFL Integrity Officer gives a report back to the AFL and then they come in over the top with some sort of a fine for the players,
well,
do you think?
Nothing in that I heard which would warrant any fine. If they stayed around outside the venue, I don't think that. Anyway, the only issue that would change things, I would imagine, is if there was evidence and proof that there was physical, coming together, and that maybe Bolton broke his wrist in a physical aspect of the fight. I think that would change things.
Right. Just on the text, Cozzy Pickett signed until the end of 2023, two more seasons away. Yeah, we know that he's got a contract ahead of him. What we're saying, right, that contract probably, he's outperformed that contract. So the point is, do you go back to him now and say, okay, well, you know, we gave you that contract. It was a good contract, but you're better than that. And in all good faith, we believe that we should be paying you more right now. And then we want to extend that by another couple of years as well.
Yeah, I think they'd be very happy to lock him away until the end, longer than 2023. Paddy Dangerfield yesterday talked to Waitley about going out. And I don't think Paddy would be a big nightclub goer-outer, but on occasions he would. This is what he had to say.
I think that the challenges are, especially when you go out, you know, you're letting your hair down after a stressful week or whatever it might be, is that you're dealing with dickheads that pull out their phones at a nightclub and are just trying to film something to put on social media. They're looking for a reaction. So you're on a highway to nothing as a player.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, you got to listen to him. He's a player.
It was pretty frank and to the point.
That's right.
And yeah, you also deal with wonderful people in the public.
That's right. But then, you know, that experience can be spoiled by one person who is, as Paddy described, yeah, like a DH.
I agree 100%.
That's what happens out there.
You deal with it every time you go out, if you have a profile. But it's,
you can choose, though, can't you, to be somewhere or not?
Yeah, of course you can.
And you choose, and, you know, we're not playing anymore, but we still have dickheads come up to us and all sorts of things when you're out and about. And you just turn around and you go. And that's what you have to do. And that's what you learn to live with.
Yeah. Every day, nearly.
Yes.
I reckon. And that's, but we're also older, Tim. Hopefully older and a little wiser and a little with some more disarming skills.
Yeah. I was at the local RSL the other night, Gary. A couple of people came up, started hassling me.
Peter's in the CB now. G'day, Pete.
G'day, boys. How are we?
Good, thanks.
That's good. Hey, there's an old saying that goes like this: the bigger they are, the harder they fall. And, you know, your comment around Brisbane and how long they've taken since winning back to back to back. I mean, if you look at history, it's littered with examples like that. You know, Chicago Bulls has won, the 49ers from the 80s. I mean, even Hawthorn, maybe, who have possibly bucked the trends, you know, through the Brereton and Dunstall era. Now, how long did it take them to get back to winning a grand final after that era? I think Jeffrey might be a little bit optimistic, perhaps, in terms of how quickly they can get back to the top of the tree.
Stay listening, Pete, because Jordan Lewis comes in every Thursday at 8 o'clock, and Jordan Lewis kicked this off on our program last year. July last year, which is nearly 12 months, sitting in that chair right there. And we'll replay what he had to say back then and we can revisit it. Because it brought a pretty caustic response from Jeffrey Kennett at the time.
It did. But what was your reaction when Jeff said it's a two-year build?
Wonderfully optimistic. Wonderfully
Don't worry about that, mate.
Wonderfully optimistic. But no, that's fair enough, I think. Oh, no. Jeff's a politician.
He is.
You know, he's putting the spin on it.
And you know, the other thing is, he's talking as much to, well, he's pretty much talking to the Hawthorn members. That's who he's talking to when he says that.
I want to play you this grab. I don't think you've heard this, and I want to get your response. This is Lee Montagna on the North Melbourne youngster Tom Powell last night on AFL 360.
This kid's an absolute beauty. You look at his numbers for of all teenagers in the competition. He looks about 12 years old, this kid, but he can seriously play. His hands are beautiful. He's a good mover. He makes the right decisions. He's holding his end up of the bargain really well. Oh, I just think this kid's got a future Brownlow medalist written all over him.
That's the first time you've heard that.
Yes.
What's your immediate response to that?
Well, it's a big call. I like it when media people make a big call. I do. It's not putting any pressure on the kid at all to say that after half a dozen games he's got Brownlow medals written all over him. I've made a big call in the past. I made one about Jager O'Meara many years ago that actually hasn't come to fruition, although he had a couple of injuries, which I think has been a bit of a setback for him along
what
the way.
What was your big call?
I said that he might become the best midfielder in the game that we've ever seen.
Of all time. That's a ridiculous. That's probably the worst call.
Yeah, it was a big call, Gary. It was a big call. Well, I wouldn't say it's the worst call that's ever been made. I said it was a big call at the time. Sometimes, though, this is what happened. You get so enraptured with what you see and excited by what you see, then you do say things that probably if you had your time all over again, you wouldn't say.
I've probably fallen in the same act. But are we... I'll throw it out there. Do you like your commentators or media people doing that? I loved everything Joey said then about Tom Powell. I thought he summed it up beautifully. I thought his description of the way he's gone about this year was absolutely perfect, on the spot, on the money. Why do you have to throw in future Brownlow medalist?
It just adds a little bit of weight to it at the end.
Is that the industry where we're in is competitive? And if you want your voice heard, you've got to bookend what you're seeing with a big belting statement.
No, I don't think in Joey's case.
No, Joey's not like
that. I don't think he's like that.
But he did. He went. That's, at all. That's, there a, is, that's an attention grabber.
There is sort of a desire for some maybe to one-up others and go a little bit harder and go a little bit stronger at times. He may very well believe that kid is going to win a Brownlow one day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, somebody probably said that about, you know, Dangerfield when they first saw him play, or maybe Nat Fyfe when they first saw them play. And, you know, they did go on and win Brownlows.
Introducing your new Kia Carnival GUV with an SUV-inspired design and spacious setting for all 8 passengers. Is it Margaret's birthday today in Sunbury? Margaret from Sunbury. 91 today. We celebrated her 90th last year, remember?
Yeah, we did.
It was this year because we couldn't do it last year.
No, but we celebrated on air at the time.
Yeah, belatedly. And her horse is ready to run on Tuesday, Margaret's Banter, of which we have a small, tiny percentage. And I heard the report from Peter Galagotis.
And?
Very happy with it.
The Mercedes-Benz Baron. Seize the opportunity on C-Class Edition C models at outstanding drive-away prices. Here's four-time Premiership Hawk, Jordan Lewis.
Lewis from 40, low, hard goal. Wide Lewis, courageous as always.
8:30. Well, welcome Jordan Lewis, who comes in every Thursday I've missed him the last few weeks. I've been down the property, but I'm here in the flesh. Good to see you, mate. Geordie?
Geez, it would have been nice waking up down there this morning. I know. If you had the chance.
Yeah, I know.
Sun coming over the hills.
Magnificent.
But frost on the hills.
Other things to do this week, which That's is fair
well, it's
enough.
It's good to see you in the flesh.
Yeah, good man. Yeah. Now, I want to take you back. July 13. What are we now? We're on May 13. So 11 months ago, you wandered into our studio. The Hawks were always of great interest to us, of course. This is what you had to say to us back on the 13th of July and then the response from Jeff Kennett.
There's no real youth that's been injected into this side. So Hawthorn have got a decision to make. Where do they want to be in 5 years? You know, I don't necessarily like the term rebuild, but Hawthorn have got a serious question to answer. Do they have to go down that path? No doubt he's the best coach in the league, but whether you want to go back down that rebuilding phase, because it's not quick. It's a 3 to 5 year process. So whether he has that type of energy.
I think Lee's different from everyone else. With due respect, but I take on board what he says more seriously than I would Jordan Lewis or someone like that who's just starting a career in the media and have got to make a name for themselves.
It's a little backhander from Jeffrey along the way, which we've all been on the receiving end of those, Geordie, but 12 months or 11 months hence, your reaction?
It's not surprising, and I suppose when I made those comments, you look at it and you want the side to do well. So you want to try and work out what's happening and how do you see them getting back to being a successful club for a period of time? And you only have to look at history and see the sides of the past 15 to 30 years, really, since the VFL then became the AFL and it became more equalised, how sides do it. And after a period of success, it's so hard to remain at the top. Now, I think the reason why Hawthorn maybe got enticed to do it is because Geelong do it so well. So they go, okay, Geelong's got a great culture. We've got a great culture. We've still got our core is still there. You know, there's been some successful players that are still there in Brewster and Gunston and Burgoyne and McAvoy. If they can do it, why can't we do it? So that does entice you to do that. But then once it doesn't happen, when do you actually say, okay, we've made the wrong decision to reboot. Now we need to start investing in youth and how do we fast track our performance? Because if you look at the period where Hawthorn were successful, and a lot gets spoken about the 2004 draft, not because of myself, but because of the two big key pillars and the key forwards that were drafted that year. But you've got to also look back in 2001 when they drafted Mitchell and Hodge. So the foundation was already there. So from 2001 to 2013, when that period started, that's 12 years. So for now, Jeff, to come out and say, we're going back to the draft in 2 years.
Okay, hold there. So that's perfectly set up. So we've hear all that. So then Jeff, when we spoke with him a couple of days ago, has conceded that they're going to go back to the draft. And in his eyes, it'll be a pretty quick fix.
It takes 2 years to do that. We're not in the race for silverware this year, unlikely next, but from 23 on, if we've got this right, we're in for another decade of very good competitive football.
Tim asked me this morning, I said wonderfully optimistic. So your reaction to that?
Yeah, well, as I was about to say, every side, and I think if you look back at Geelong as well, if you manage their chart, it's a 5 to 10 year process if you get the picks right. Now, you spoke about, on the way in, I was listening to you speak about Brisbane. It's been 18 years since they've won a premiership. So if you don't get the picks right, it doesn't guarantee that you'll be back there in 2 to 3 years. So this is a long process. And from a Hawthorn supporter and watching them on the weekend and seeing what is out on the park at the moment, and I know, you know, Will Day is not there, Denver Brass not there. So
Sicily not there.
Sicily not there. So there's your base. So this is 2001. So then now what you've got to add is you've got to add other talent along the way. You need to get games into them. They need to play together. So it is, I think, 5 to 7 years away from actually being a consistent performer at the top of the ladder.
If
you nail the picks. Now, it looks like they've nailed Will Day.
Yep.
James Sicily will be a star of the competition once he returns.
CJ.
CJ absolutely will be a star of the competition. So then these picks that are coming in this year's draft, next year's draft, and maybe the one after are so important to set up that piece of success.
So if Jeff was sitting here and said, Jordan, I'm listening to you like I would Lee, I think we can turn around 2 years. Your response to him is, Jeff?
It won't happen in 2 years. It's far too hard to happen in 2 years. And there's so many sides out there. You know, there'll be four or five sides out there that are right now at the top of the ladder that started this process 10 years ago.
Yeah. So what's that leave the coach then? Because we also spoke to Jeffrey about that, and he said, oh, understandably, he's contracted till the end of next year.
Yep.
So you're saying 5 to 7 if they get it right. And yep. I think we all agree.
Right?
Yep. So Clarko then is contracted till the end of next year, which is it's sort of neither here nor there in terms of a 5 to 7 rebuild. So where does that leave him?
Well, it's probably the same conversation that we had 12 months ago. He's got a decision to make. And I think right now he would be setting the side up for success. So whether he is around when they become successful is probably not not an answer I can give you, but right now he sets that up for the next coach that comes in.
Right.
But he's a smart man, but he would be understanding right now in the way that you see him speak in the media where he thinks this list is at. Because 2008 was probably a year where they got a little bit teased. They finished fourth, they bow out in straight sets in the finals, but they probably didn't predict that they were going to finish that high. So then you go, oh wow, maybe we're still in that window. Yeah. So then that drags you on to 2019. Mm. Then they finish ninth, and then now they're back in the position where we thought they may have been 3 years ago.
We've heard from coaches recently how tough the business of coaching is, and we've heard from players talking about coaches and you know their observations, that type of thing. How does Clarko absorb the pressure? Does he do it easily? Well, in the time that you were there, did you notice a discernible difference in his day-to-day personality, the way that he went about the job?
Yeah, unbelievably well is my overarching thoughts. Coaches change and evolve, I think, the longer they're in the job. When I first got to the club clearly was down the bottom of the ladder. There was no pressure on Alistair to perform. So he was very much one of us. And then as you evolve and as you become more successful and you're getting pulled in all different directions, the coaches become a little bit, I don't know what the right word is, but a little bit more distant from the playing group. And that's when the assistant coaches take over. One, because you're probably sick of hearing the same things from the coach, and the assistant coaches can give you a little bit more variety. But then as it goes on, your dealings with the coach really only are on game day or main training sessions.
Been unbelievable, the coaching, factory that they've created there at Hawthorn.
Yeah.
Factory is probably not the right word. But, and did, of each of those assistant coaches that has gone on had success, did any of those surprise you?
Probably Adam Simpson was probably the one that surprised me, not because of his football nous, but I just never knew that he wanted to be a senior coach. He was a great assistant coach and great in terms of relationships. And he had a really good and high football IQ. So he was probably the one that surprised me in going towards the senior coaching position. I thought he would just be an assistant coach for a period of time, but he was sort of thrust into that quite quickly after being an assistant. So he's done remarkably well and one of the best coaches in the AFL.
Did you always think, Bevo, given the experience you had with him, that he was going to go on and be an AFL coach and be successful?
Yeah, I think so. I think he had, I mean, he was really the main coach that came into Hawthorn and implemented the defensive system, the assertive defence. I'd never really heard about it before that, but he was the one that brought that in. So it was nearly the right mix. And I suppose we talk about coaches go into an environment where there's foundations set up. And Western Bulldogs, for years under McCartney, were contest, contest, contest. Yeah. And Bevo's main strength is what happens outside the contest. So that was complemented so well by what was already there.
Jordan Lewis is with us. Love having the conversations with him. This is just one that's popped in my head. Carlton have been a fascination for all year, basically. And David Teague's coaching and where he sits there with it. When the coach comes out before a game and says, look, I think this is going to be a shootout. you know, I think we're playing the Western Bulldogs. I think stand by. It's going to be entertaining. It's going to be a shootout, right? Does that send a subliminal message to the playing group? Not the really strong-minded ones, because they take it for what it is. Yep. But is it giving your team a defensive out? Is he saying, look, yeah, we're going for it. Defensively, we know we're going to get scored against because I'm conceding it's going to be a shootout. So I'm already telling you that the Western Bulldogs are going to score goals against us. And he's the writer on that comment or that he said, we're just going to have to make sure we kick more. Right? So then I'm thinking, okay, the game's there. They're 27 points up, deep into the third quarter. The shootout mentality is working. So they're all feeling great. The players are great. Hey, what's this? You know, Katigi said we're going to have to go. We've got to kick more. We are. We're kicking more. We're almost five more. And then the prophecy comes true. The shootout comes the other way. So they go bang. The Dogs go bang again. And they go bang. And then I'm just thinking the defensive out is in the mind. They go, well, Katigi told us, and it's happening here. And we don't have to defend this. So
we're going to attack it.
Yeah, this is my mindset. There. Well, this is what I'm thinking about. We're not going to defend this. We're just got to shoot. We're going to kick more. That's what our coach said publicly. Now, I don't know what the messaging is privately. I'm going from the public. And in the end, they couldn't. So the shootout beat them. Players absorb stuff. I just thought at the time, gee, that could be a defensive rod for this team. And it played out that way.
Yeah, it's the hardest thing from a coaching point of view is what do you focus on when there's so much to work on in your game in Carlton's aspect? What do you focus on? Do you go into that game going, wow, okay, Western Bulldogs are highly offensive. They're going to threaten us from a scoreboard point of view. Do we go super defensive? And you probably get beaten at that game as well. So then do you try and energise your playing group to say, okay, this might not be our best defensive game, but at times during the game, we will need to be defensive. Mm. So there's a balance, and that's why you rely so heavily on your senior players out on the field. Go, okay, it's been a shootout for a period of time, three quarters. So we've had a really good three quarters. Now we feel the pressure. Now we feel the momentum changing. How do we then switch? Okay, Teague said we need to go offensive, but this is a moment in the game right now where we need to go super defensive.
And therein lies the question that remains. And it's a legitimate question because they haven't been able to fix it for a long period of time. Is they keep giving them up, right? They keep giving them up. So now your supporter looks at you and go, you told us it's a shootout.
Yep.
But you got to realise that when the shootout's on, how are you going to stop it?
Yeah. That's right. But then the point there that Geordie made also is about the leadership out there on the ground, the players out there that are capable of recognising that and then influencing the other players as to actually implementing it.
Yeah, and especially when you come up against top eight sides or mainly top four sides, when you know they've got scoring power. So at some stage during the game, these sides are going to get, you know, a two-goal run on, a three-goal run on. Now, what you know, my experience suggests that once there's been two goals in a row, how do you then shut the game down? Is it a person behind the play, you know, a seventh defender that drops back and helps out your defence? Is it just purely by getting the ball and moving in a slower and safer manner? Mm. I don't see any of that with Carlton at the moment.
Well, they couldn't
get their hands on it.
Yeah, because they lost centre clearance. So 6v6 in their back half, they couldn't do anything about it.
Lines going nicely, Wispy. They're gathering. They don't need to be at their best right now, but they need to be at their best in the back half of the year. I get a suspicion that that's what's going to happen because Daniel Rich Flavier, he's just in very, very nice touch, the halfback flanker. He's been good enough to join us. Welcome, Dan.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
How's that as a summation? You boys just came out of the blocks, not, I wouldn't say jumped out on the steel, but you've got yourselves going nicely now.
Yeah, I think the first few weeks, a little bit disappointing. Obviously, the wins, losses dictate a lot of things, but we were doing some good stuff, but there was some things in games that were letting us down and letting the opposition obviously get on the scoreboard, but we've got back to how we want to play the last few weeks, and I suppose it's been a good thing to be able to turn it around and get back in that positive ledger on the win-loss column.
And Lachie Neale, obviously, he got injured, he went out, and Hugh McCluggage has seen more midfield time. Have you been surprised by his form in any way? He's been outstanding form.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me, to be honest. He's one of those guys that he always trains so well and does some stuff at training that you think, wow, he's got some real class. We joke around and call him the Rolls Royce, but that's kind of the way he plays. He's just so smooth and clean with the footy, but he's had a fantastic month in particular.
Does he call himself the Rolls Royce, or what does he call himself?
Oh, no, he's the kind of guy that he hates it. He hates it when you talk about him like that, the country boy. So, he definitely tries to play it down.
I'm surprised to see you guys playing Joey Danaher the way that you are. Like, I know that he played at Essendon, and I was unhappy to see him go, by the way, but at Essendon he played mainly as a forward, rarely went into the ruck, but you guys seem to have shifted him a little bit further up the ground. What was the reasoning behind that?
Oh, I think he jumped on board with that. He's one of those guys, as you know, he's so mobile, and he almost in a way plays like that Brody Grundy extra midfielder kind of player, when he can get around the ground and use his skills and get back and take marks and all that type of stuff.
Hey, so Daniel,
it gives him a bit of a different dimension.
Sorry about that. Just on a broader. In a broader conversation, the rugby league boss, Pushahead Peters, we like to call him, has said that, rugby's got a real battle on its hands up there in Queensland. Given what happened last year, we talked about this before, the COVID-19, all the AFL clubs up there. Have you noticed what a difference there is in the interest around AFL football in, say, the last 12, 10 months?
Oh, massive. I've seen it. I've been here for 13 years now, and since my first year to how it is now, it's grown exponentially. And I think last year was just that big, massive extra boost. We had obviously a lot of teams here, grand final, all that stuff. But I think the work the AFL and the AusKick programs and whatnot do, it's no surprise to me that AFL is growing huge. It's probably second behind league now, in my opinion, and it's catching it pretty quickly.
So they got
credit to the AFL.
They got something to worry about, have they? The old rugby league boys.
Oh, gee, I hope so. I'm from Perth, so yeah. I didn't really know what rugby league was until I moved here.
Hey, we like to go a bit. We don't want to go too heavy on the footy. We like to find out what else you're up to up there. Golf is always a topic when we talk to the Lions boys. They love it. Your swing was described to us by Jared Lyons as being compact, punchy, not beautiful, but you hit it a long way. Is that pretty accurate?
Oh, it's spot on. It's very ugly, but it gets from A to B. So,
what are you playing off?
Coming from him, I'm off about 8 at the moment. But yeah, can be about 28 some days.
It's getting the job done. Give us a little rundown on who can hit it and who can't. Is Jared you got Ryder reply for Jared here?
No. He's probably got the best looking swing in the club, so I'm going to keep my mouth shut on that one.
Right.
Okay. But there's definitely some blokes that could. I'll get a few lessons. Darcy Gardner, Harris Andrews, a couple of my fellow defenders could spend some time at the range. I'll say that for sure.
And what about their kit? Like, who turns up looking just absolutely sharp, like Dustin Johnson style, and who's just a bit sloppy?
The sharp guys. I think Chuck thinks he's Charlie Range. Charlie Ranger Cameron thinks he's a NFL player. and then you've got guys on the other end, like Harris Andrews, who's a big dork, so he needs I don't know if you've got any vouchers for some menswear, but he can definitely get involved with a few of those.
What about the coach? Does he play a little bit of golf or not? No time for it.
Bowls. More bowls.
Yeah, I think he
lawn bowls.
He should be playing bowls. But I think maybe not so much last year, but the year before he was getting out and having a round or nine holes on a Friday afternoon, just because he gets quite built up, as you know. So I think he was getting out and having a bit of a swing, sometimes by himself, just to get his head out of it. So from what I've seen and heard, it's a standard old man swing. But it's good that he gets into it. don't tell him.
We're talking to the Brisbane Lions, Daniel Rich. Now, on behalf of all the back flankers out there, Gary is far from complimentary.
No, I'm not.
You're far from complimentary. You said it's the easiest spot to play on the ground. That's what you've said.
I do say it.
Which is far from complimentary about the job that they do.
That's not being uncomplimentary. That's an observation.
Can argue your case. Argue your case, Daniel. How difficult is it?
It's got its pros and cons. I suppose I take a few kick in, so that's a easy way to get a touch of the leather. But I think it depends who you're playing on and how the boys are going up the field. As a 30-year-old, it's no fun when you've got the quick, nifty blokes flying around and the ball's coming in easy, but it's all part of the game. I love it back there and really enjoying my footy, but each of their own and their opinions.
You take the kick-ins. Are you aware that metres gained is added to your total by those kick-ins?
Oh, it's definitely not something I'm thinking about when I'm doing the kick-ins, but yeah, we played in a few games where there's been a lot of it's been wet and metres gained is a pretty important factor, so that's definitely more prevalent in those games.